Okay, great. So thank you all for your attention, and thank you to the organizers for allowing me to speak. I'm just going to jump right in. This is work that has recently been posted by Eric Cavalcanti, myself, and Jacques Pienaar. And it's on the preparation problem in nonlinear extensions of quantum theory. So I'm going to start with a little story. I'm going to sell you something, or offer to sell you something, and you're going to decide whether you want to buy it. So I'm advertising it. I'm saying it's all new. This is something that you can't do in ordinary quantum mechanics. This is nonlinear quantum evolution. You can use it for state discrimination. No orthogonality, no problem. This is called the nonlinear box. Now, that's more than just a description of a box with the word nonlinear in it. What I'm saying is that outside of the box, ordinary quantum mechanics holds. And what I'm not saying by that is that any particular interpretation of it holds, but that operationally it holds. So this allows for interpretations that say the universe could be in a pure state of the universe, go to the church of the larger Hilbert space, or it could allow for things like dynamic collapse, Heisenberg cuts. Whatever operational quantum mechanics says is okay outside the box. But within the box, we have some crazy evolution. If you have the zero state, it evolves to zero. If you have the minus state, which is not orthogonal to zero, it nevertheless evolves to an orthogonal state. But we want to verify this. Presumably, if I'm going to sell you this for millions or billions of dollars, you want to verify that it really does what I say it does. And if you can't verify it, then you're going to call shenanigans and say, this is not good advertising. Or it is good advertising because it's a bad product. But what if I told you you can only put in zero? You would say, well, wait a minute, that's not really a nonlinear box. You just made a box that spits out zero. I'm not stupid. And if I said, well, you can only put in minus, sorry. You know, it really does the other one for the other input, but you have to make, you have to put a particular thing in to see it. It's like, okay, but that's not reasonable either. If I can only do that, then there's a simpler explanation in terms of ordinary quantum mechanics. You can see what's going on here, that I'm saying I'm applying the reasoning that's involved in scientific thinking to a claim that is beyond what we currently believe exists. Here's another example. You must alternate your inputs between zero and minus. So you got to do that one, and then you do that one, and then you do that one. Well, that's also dumb, because I could just make a box that outputs 0 and 1. And if I tell you the box does this to these inputs, and then I give you restrictions, unreasonable restrictions on what those inputs could be, then it doesn't really do what I'm advertising. This should be an obvious point, but there are cases in the literature where this is being said. You have to use one of these particular methods to choose your input state. So you can flip a coin, but you can't use a pseudorandom number generator. You can use quantum randomness, but you can't choose by fiat. Well, that's a bit silly too, although now we're getting into the area where it could be close to verifiable if there are enough methods. But really what we want is to say you can use any method you want to choose your input state to be zero or minus. And if that's the case, then it is verified. There's a caveat here though, because this could be relaxed to a finite set of methods that seem random enough. Or you could have a theory where you say this box does this for these inputs, but I'm going to specify what the caveats are. So what I'm saying you cannot do is say that this evolution holds in general for this nonlinear box, and then not say what preparations can be used to verify it. You have to be able to tell me what things can be used to verify it. And it has to make sense with the claim. Okay, that's the first point. It's so basic that we don't even think about it. We take this for granted in science. We have to do it here because people have forgotten this. Let's talk about epistemology. Epistemology is the study of how we know what we claim to know. Claims must be verifiable for them to have any kind of empirical meaning. And unverifiable claims should not really be considered at the scientific level, maybe at the meta-scientific level when we're considering theories, philosophical questions that guide us toward different theories. But in terms of actual science and experiments, you shouldn't be making claims that can't be verified. The requirements for verification don't depend on the details of the physics, but rather on the process of logical reasoning and inference. This is because the scientific method requires that we be able to test stuff, either forensically or experimentally. And if you're going to say this box does something and you can test it, well, then I should be able to test it. And this can sometimes allow the buyer to be fooled and still get meaningful results. Like, there could be caveats to this. But the point is that you have to have some things that can verify this. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to call it nonlinear. Check how we're doing on time. OK, good. Perfect. So I'm going to talk briefly about closed timeline curves. These haven't been discussed as much in this conference as they have in others. This seems to be more the Unruh conference. A large portion of the talks have involved the Unruh effect. But in other contexts, closed timeline curves represent an extreme case of curvature that could lead to possibly nonlinear effects. So there's several different models. The two ones that are talked about right now in the literature are the Deutsch model. It has several different incarnations. I'm not going to talk about all of them in the time provided. I'm also going to mention that there are post-selected teleportation models, which model the time travel by post-selection on a Bell state. I believe that would be Seth Lloyd's favorite model. All of these involve nonlinear quantum evolution. I should say that the Deutsch model has an interpretation as a nonlinear box because the consistency conditions that it imposes are local to the box, operationally local to the box, and so we should be able to define an outside region where there is no influence of the box. But these PCTCs, it's not clear that can be done for PCTCs. So I'm not really talking about them in this talk. I'm more focusing on the Deutsch model. But I wanted to mention that there exists a second model. But all of these predict some sort of nonlinear quantum evolution. And such an evolution doesn't respect the superposition principle. And there are arguments about the results in this context. This is naturally controversial. State discrimination is an obvious one. If you have state discrimination, you can break supposedly unbreakable quantum cryptography protocols. It also appears that you can do cloning, as Casey talked about. And we may get a computational speedup at both the classical and the quantum level. There's also the possibility of superluminal signaling. Much of the older literature talks about this and how you can't avoid it. I no longer believe that it's true that you cannot avoid it, but it is a problem that really is crucial to this argument, and it's crucial to why I'm talking about the preparation of states. And in addition to this, nonlinear boxes have foundational implications apart from their application to CTCs. Just like the PR boxes, non-local boxes, have told us about the extent of the non-locality of quantum mechanics, these boxes have the potential to tell us about the extent or the nature of the linearity or nonlinearity of whatever theory we have, whether it be quantum mechanics or some extension thereof. So these have important foundational implications apart from just CTCs. But let's keep going. It turns out that in nonlinear quantum theory, interpretations of quantum theory, which used to be operationally equivalent, no longer are. In fact, they strongly affect the results. They are empirically distinguishable in nonlinear theories. This creates no shortage of problems. Because what people end up doing, and what I'm trying to discourage being done, is you have your favorite pet interpretation of quantum theory, and you want to write a nonlinear extension of quantum theory, and you just naively, without even thinking about it perhaps, just apply that interpretation and say, well, then we get this, without actually thinking about, okay, well, what does that interpretation really imply? What are its connections to everything else? What would this model look like under other interpretations? It's often an unstated assumption, and sometimes it's even stated as fact, which is even worse. But there's a more fundamental problem. This is using linear tools in a nonlinear theory, for instance, the density matrix. The two main arguing parties that I'm going to talk about are this paper by Bruhn and company in 2009, which says that using a CTC, you can discriminate non-orthogonal states. But the result of this is that preferred decomposition positions of density matrices exist. So they are not, all decompositions are not the same for a given density matrix. Bennett et al. Responded in the same year by saying that there can't be preferred decompositions and therefore you can't discriminate between non-orthogonal states. They call this a linearity trap. I'm not going to get into the details of that, but you can read what they mean by it. But the point is that we can use epistemology to cut through all of this. So let's talk about ignorance. If we have a verifiable nonlinear box, then Alice's ignorance of the state actually prepared by Rob in his verifying run can't ruin it. So Rob verifies it, Alice isn't looking, It better still be verified, because that's what happens in a real laboratory. If your theory tells you that what's going on at the laboratory scale is so different from what our ordinary daily experience is, then you don't really have a nonlinear box, first of all, and you have problems with the scientific method. So assuming the scientific method holds and that we can prepare states over here outside the box, measure them ordinarily, then what happens inside shouldn't matter whether there's someone in the other room who doesn't know what's going on. You should be able to look at your data and see that it works, if it's verifiable. So that means that we should get non-orthogonal state discrimination if we have verifying nonlinear evolution. So what this means is that if we have the ability to discriminate, that if we have verifiable nonlinear pure state to pure state evolution, we should be able to discriminate between some non-orthogonal pure states. Density matrices, therefore, cannot be used in general for proper mixtures of the pure states. That's where something's actually prepared and you just don't know which. Now, this necessarily has a philosophical interpretation, because I said actually prepared, but that's really what's going on. If you just take an operational approach, someone makes a state, everyone agrees what it is, and you put it through, and for all intents and purposes, that's what should happen. And we have Eric and I have a comment on this. So is it okay to do discrimination? What does it mean? Well, Brun said that they claim nonlinear pure state to pure state evolution. They say they can distinguish non-orthogonal states, and we have preferred decompositions, and it's self-consistent. So that's an okay prescription. Bennett come along and say, well, okay, we have nonlinear pure state to pure state evolution, but they use a density matrix for the proper mixture of the input states. It's not really a showstopper, although that should raise some flags. And then they say that you can't discriminate pure states in the purported evolution, but that means that you can't verify the evolution, so why are you talking about it at all? And under what conditions is this actually occurring? That's important. You can't just say you have this evolution and then say that you'll never see it. That means you don't have the evolution. Maybe that's what they meant, but it wasn't clear in their paper, and this is designed to shine light on that. It's empirically inconsistent. But it is an interesting result that you can't verify if that's true. So let's imagine the case where all pure states are created equal. All preparations are basically the same. Then if I have an entangled state and I remotely measure and get the result up along the z-axis, then the other state will be the other system will be polarized up. At least I'll know that. That's what quantum mechanics says, and all the statistics bear that out. If I get down, same thing. If I get to the right, same thing. To the left, same thing. And therefore, if I make a measurement in the z basis, then if all preparations are the same, then I have prepared remotely some, you know, either up or down, and you just don't know which if you're sitting over here. I know which, but you don't. If all preparations are created equal, then you would have a different proper mixture based on this remote projection. So if we have this situation where all preparations are the same, all pure states are created equal, and we have verifiable nonlinear pure state to pure state evolution, then we are led to the inevitable conclusion that we can superluminally signal. You can't get around this. Verifiable, and we have this assumption. So one of these has to be wrong if we want to forbid signaling. So let's imagine the case where maybe they're not created equal. So in this case, if we know what the state is, perhaps this is one way of looking at it. If we know what the state is, the result is over here, then you remotely prepare the state in the other side. But if you don't, if this guy doesn't know what the result is, then perhaps this measurement doesn't actually collapse it into a proper mixture. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's an improper mixture, in which case the decomposition doesn't matter, and you don't see an effect. In that case, we still claim that we have verifiable nonlinear pure state to pure state evolution. That's okay. We haven't said that this is ruled out, although it is one of those things that's a bit of a caveat saying we can't do this. But if we want to forbid signaling, then we have what's called a preparation problem. What are the states that verify it, and what are the states that don't? You cannot get around this. You cannot talk about nonlinear quantum evolution without addressing this problem if you want these two aspects. If you don't have this one, then it's just linear. If you don't have this one, then you have problems with relativity. So the preparation problem has two different types of states. We don't actually use these in the current incarnation of the paper, but I think it's an intuitive way to talk about it. So these are pure states that are real. They've collapsed. All parties agree as to what the state is, for all intents and purposes. There's a classical record somewhere. And ignorance of which one of these states from an ensemble actually exists yields what's called a proper mixture. These states can be used to verify the nonlinear pure state to pure state evolution. But to prevent signaling, these states must not be able to be prepared remotely. So somehow you have to forbid that. And you have to say what that mechanism is in your theory in order to be taken seriously. type 2 pure states, let's say, are supposedly pure states that are really just one branch of an entangled state. This is one possible interpretation of it. They could be remotely preferable, but they only reveal their purity to some parties. But importantly, attempting to remotely prepare a mixture of these states only creates an improper mixture, which has no preferred decomposition. And so it can't be used to verify due to the no signaling requirement. So you see what's happening here. If you have verification and you want to forbid signaling, then you have the split in the preparation in the preparations of quantum states. So you cannot get around this. So that means you need two things. You need a formal distinction in your theory between the two types of preparations. You need a different mathematical description of each type of state. You can't just say, Rod prepares this type of pure state for verification. This type of pure state goes through and has this behavior, and yet he doesn't see that behavior. That's inconsistent. You can't do that. You need a separate mathematical description. In addition, you need an operational distinction between which preparations go with which. So let me summarize that. The two types of states that I've talked about are indistinguishable in ordinary linear quantum theory. And the distinction between them is deemed an interpretational question. Again, we just don't need to worry about it. None of the statistics matter. Shut up and calculate. It's very convenient in that respect. But when you go beyond linear quantum theory, you have to address this. And you have to do it responsibly. You can't just say, oh, well, this is the standard way of doing it, so that has to be right. You have to say what you mean by the standard way. And there are authors that have done this very well, and I think that people are catching on that this has to be done. But the point of this is sort of just to, you know, raise an alarm that you have to do this. This is related to the measurement problem, or collapse of the wave function. And if nonlinear evolution exists, the preparation problem has a clear empirical meaning in terms of verifiability and signaling. I have two more slides. So the preparations that are usually thought of as type 1 are non-destructive projective measurement, cooling to some ground state. But the question is, where do we get pure ancillas for the measurement from? Where does the low entropy reservoir come from for the cooling? Preparations that are usually thought of as type 2 include projectively measuring one arm of an EPR pair. I mentioned that earlier. Dynamic collapse models for quantum theory are not ruled out by this. And this would reduce them to type 1 states in some cases. But then there's the question of what's the speed of the collapse. If I make a measurement here and it really collapses, does it propagate at the speed of light? Adrian Kent talked about this in terms of a state readout device in which this happens, 2005. There's another approach by Tim Ralph and Casey Myers that talk about deterministic versus random preparations. And I've recently been convinced in the last couple days that this might be a way to get around this particular distinction between type 1 and type 2. The point is that you have classical data, fine. It's a different, empirically it's fine, but it requires some sort of Heisenberg cut. But we have classical data written onto a quantum state. So based on this data, you would definitely prepare this state. And that can be used to verify the evolution. But random preparations, such as projection, which are necessary for remote preparation, are ruled out. But it seems like a Heisenberg cut's necessary. That hasn't been proven, but it seems like that would do the trick if we had that. So in summary, epistemology, how we know, it's the study of how we know what we know, provides a theory-independent consistency check. It's always available by the assumptions of the applicability of the scientific method. We assume that we can do stuff, we can do experiments and check the results. If you can do that, well, you better be able to verify what you're claiming. If empirically meaningful, nonlinear evolution has weird effects that can't be swept under the rug, such as non-orthogonal state discrimination. And no signaling from verifiable nonlinear evolution implies the preparation problem. You can't get around it. You have to say something about it. Having a distinct mathematical representation for the different types of states is necessary, but it's not enough. We also need to identify the laboratory procedures that will produce each type of pure state. Dynamic collapse or a Heisenberg cut may provide a solution. That seems to be the best. However, that has not been proven. That's just our best guess at the moment. Other ideas may be possible. Thank you.